This is Nancy Qualls Corbett. This is February 13th, 1998. Dionysus and the Individuation Process. And this is labeled one half of the lecture, second half of the lecture. So let's see what we've got.
And because of that, he was sent to a psychiatric hospital to be evaluated by this Dr. Dysart. Now, on the surface, it looks like it's the story of this child, of this young man, and what has happened to him, and the confusion that he has with his own sensual, sexual, budding nature, and this judgment and guilt-producing God that comes on him, you see. That looks at him, sees him. But the story is really about the trial and this wrestling that we've talked about of the psychiatrist. He narrates the play, and he tells you, as he's going on, different aspects of himself. He says in the beginning of the play, he says, you see, the thing is, I'm desperate. You see, I'm wearing that horse's head myself. That's the feeling, all reined up in old language and old assumptions, straining to jump clean-hoofed onto a track I only suspect is there. I can't see because my educated average head is being held at the wrong angle. My Apollonian head, you see, I can't see. I can't jump because the bit forbids it. And my own basic force, my horsepower, if you will, is too little. And that's how he starts introducing us to himself. I am desperate. I am all reined up. In other words, I don't have this life. Well, so then through the play, as the story unfolds about this young man, Alan is his name, he begins to treat him. And then one day he's with the magistrate, whose name is Hester, the woman magistrate who brings the child to him for evaluation. So he's explaining this to Hester, and he said, look, to go through life and call it yours, your life, you have to have your own pain. Pain that's unique to you. You just can't dip into a common bin and say, hey, that's enough. He's done that. All right, he's sick. He's full of misery and he's full of fear. But that boy has known a passion more ferocious than I have felt in any second of my life. And let me tell you something, I envy it. So he's beginning to say, this kid has something. And what this kid had, you see, when he worked in the stable, was at night, at midnight, he would take a horse out, and he would take all his clothes off and go out into this field, take all of his clothes off, and he would ride this horse to a state of orgasm. The ecstasy, the liberation, this whole thing as you can imagine. And that was the ecstasy that he felt. And that was what Dysart knew of this kid. That boy has known a passion more ferocious than I have felt in any second of my life. And let me tell you something, I envy it. Hester says, oh, you can't. And then Dysart says, don't you see, don't you see, that's what his stare has been saying to me. At least I galloped. When have you? And he continues and says, no one can do that for you. I've settled for being pallid and provincial out of my own eternal timidity. I tell everyone that Margaret, his wife, the Puritan, and I'm the pagan, some pagan. Such wild returns I make to the womb of civilization. 3 weeks a year in the Peloponnese, every bed booked in advance, every meal paid for by vouchers, cautious jaunts in hired fiats, a case crammed full of kale pectate. Such fantastic surrender to the primitive. And I use that word endlessly, primitive. Oh, the primitive world, I say, what instinctive truths were lost in it. And while I sit there baiting a poor, unimaginative woman with that word, that freaky boy tries to conjure the, that freaky boy tries to conjure the reality. I sit looking at pages of centaurs tramping the soul of Argos. And outside my window, he is trying to become one in a Hampshire field. I watch that woman knitting night after night, a woman I haven't kissed in 6 years. And he stands in the dark for an hour, sucking the sweat off his God's hairy cheek. Then in the morning, I put away my books on the cultural shelf and I close up the Kodachrome snaps of Mount Olympus. I touch my reproduction of Dionysus for luck, and I go off to hospital to treat him for insanity. Do you see? Now that's his point. That's the wrestling he's beginning to understand. These are the things I have said I really do, but in reality, it's all an Apollonian way of thinking of it. I have never reached that basic depth. This kid, who they're calling insane, majesty. That's the wrestling. That's the dichotomy that we feel within ourselves. This is the way in which our instinctual life is felt. Our Apollonian life says, oh no, you don't. And will not let it have life, you see. So who is this God we do not know? What is this archetypal energy that is so incongruent with collective conscious understanding? We refuse to acknowledge it. In the body of psychoanalytic thought, Dr. Jung established that the Dionysian element is the basic structure of our psyche. What had been regarded as inferior, unbridled, and the dangerous aspect of life to be dissected and tamed began to be seen as vital parts of ourselves to be brought into consciousness. Euripides called him the kindest, yet most, the God most terrible, yet the kindest unto humankind, and he can be. As we said, the God destroys the essence of life in those who negate him. Life becomes mere existence. Joy and exaltation escape us. The grayness abounds as we become emotionally isolated, cynical, and sterile. For those who can recognize his divinity and the power, there's an abundance of life. Dionysus is the god of enrapturement, and transported into a spirit of new vision. As we said, he brings this fluidity into what was rigid, determined, or controlled. He breaks down useless attitudinal barriers and dissolves outlived collective values. The epiphany of Dionysus into consciousness is a breakthrough. As we said, the Greeks say Dionysus comes. It is just that. It is there. And one feels this. It is nevertheless without danger, a danger of alienation. We cannot understand sometimes what is this that's happened to us. Certainly others around us cannot either. And as we said, as we relate the Maenads to Dionysus and the madness that they seemingly went through, it is not the madness of insanity, but the power or inspiration that comes from within. It's not of ordinary making. New images, creative ideas, innovative approaches to old problems, even certain behaviors are without precedence. And even though this madness does not seem, or it's not what we would consider normal, maybe we even feel a little crazy to ourselves, but it is at this point of acknowledging a divine inspiration, a power from the depths of our being much greater than ego identification. You feel it emerging. It is more than ego. Dionysus, as we've talked about, is also the god of the vine, of wine, and of intoxication. He symbolizes the growth of the creative fruits rooted deep in matter, not up here somewhere. And as wine, we collect those fruits, and they are contained. And then they are put through this transformative aspect, this transformative process. It's alive and bubbling in winemaking, you see. What is there has been altered. The raw material, with this newness coming in, is altered in something new. It's the Dionysian spirit, you see, that it loosens and it liberates. It's kind of like feeling slightly intoxicated. But it's not to be confused here with drunkenness. Because in drunkenness, you see, consciousness is just numbed and our senses are overcome. But it's a heightened awareness of what's going on. It's an opening up to more than our rigid understanding, our rigid beliefs would be. It heightens this awareness to enlarge our container of creative energy. It is alive and bubbling, just like this winemaking, you see. It is being transformed into an inspirited expression of art, or of science, or of love. Dr. Jung writes of the Dionysian intoxication, and he says, "Now the slave is free. Now all the rigid, hostile barriers which necessity, caprice, or shameless fashion have set up between man and woman woman and woman, man and man, are broken down. The wine spirit of Dionysus is the transcendent function which fills one with exhilaration, freedom, and the celebration of new life. You do feel that new transcendent function take place. As we have told, the myths of Dionysus tell of his death and his rebirth, a cycle that is ever present in psychological development. The life force challenges all that is dead in us, yet sustained in our fear of change or our feeling of impotence. We're afraid to change, or we don't know how to change. But it is this life that is profound and noble that Dionysus embodies. Life forever changing, the dying of the status quo, followed by new beginnings, the creative energy which upsets existing structures. We can't have it both ways. It is this Dionysian archetypal force which leads to growing consciousness and our process of individuation. That's the God. He's powerful. He's moving. He brings changes. And it's certainly, I think, worth our while to know. He says, too late you have come to know me, then we must begin to know him and to give honor to this God, this force, this life force that is within us. Thank you. I think, Golda, that we take a little break now, is this right? And I would think logically one could say that's probably more related to Dionysian, but it doesn't feel that way to me. It really has to do with beat, with the rhythm, perhaps a bit of syncopation. It has to do with what stirs the body to move. Yeah. Can you stand up so they can hear you too? And yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like I'm thinking that, yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking, okay, here we have an Apollonian culture, and we have upwelling Dionysian energy, mm-hmm. and it's messy. There's not a good way, you know. There's not a good meeting of the two. And I'm just thinking of this form, the Haitian Voodoo form, which is a form which has worked with this Dionysian energy enough that there's all this differentiation into these different rhythms that involve particular energies, and just that's like a real kind of developed Dionysian form.
Yeah. Let me, yes.
Uses that kind of energy in religious services that are Christian.
Exactly.
Specifically yeah. Baptist, but also what we call holy rollers. And if you want to experience that in a religious context, that's a good kind of place to go. We start with, you know, the sanctified church or a holiness church, or of course we're a gospel.
Thank you. No, I think that that's wonderful, and that it really too invokes the God, if you will, that this music, whatever it is that moves, that touches your own temple, you see, is that point. I'll tell you a funny story. We went, when we were in Greece and did a seminar, and it was a group of women. And one night we were doing a lecture kind of thing, but we, instead of doing it there in the hotel, then we went to this nice restaurant bar that had a room for us, and we were eating and we were drinking wine and so forth. And as one of the ladies said, tell us some more stories of Dionysus. So I would tell more stories of Dionysus, more myths, you know, and then we would drink a little more wine, and then she would say, well, now tell us some more stories. So we went on. We were told stories of Dionysus. And then as we wandered down, walking down the street in the so section of Greece and of Athens, about six or eight of us decided there was a club, a kind of a nightclub and so forth, that would go in there and have the little ouzo or do the whole Greek thing. Well, we went in there, packed jam full. There was a kind of a stage and Greek dancers and, you know, wonderful. This full of spirit and so forth. And there was about 100 young people there. And in a bit, after this little stage thing that they had done, and the music was going, they all got up. They started dancing. They were on the stage. They were on the tables. They were all over the place, you know. And I thought, you know, that was pitiful. We talked to Dionysus. They were in the middle of it, you see. And it was this beautiful, just gorgeous spirit that was just carrying them. But it had to do with music. It was just really brought out by the music, I think. So it is. And I think, you know, what you were talking about, I think is ever, ever so evident. And in the churches where the music comes in, but the body never does get to... The body never does, but as you said, you know, with the holy rollers, or the, you know, are really. I'm from the South, and I love to go to the Afro American churches, because that's where you feel spirit. That's the only place you feel spirit in a church, and that's with their music.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy rollers. Yeah. It is. It is exactly there. And I think what that part to me is the missing element that we have, because our instinctual life, which lives in our body, you see, never, we worship from here up. And the passion never gets touched. The real depth and the passion, the sensuousness of our being is never touched in our religious attitudes. And that's pitiful. Okay.
You had mentioned the Oklahoma City bomb.
Yeah.
When the city was bombed, studied about that because it's a similar thing happened. The tale of the story of the bomb. But the standard steps is not constituted to initiation, to process, to financial. All that represents the refugee. And I just wondered what you thought was going to happen there. Is it just a punishment of some place, or, you know, is it just this total negative side of God, or, and that's all you see?
No, I don't. If I'm understanding you correctly, it's not just Oklahoma City bombing. It's just not any, you know, it's not just terrorists. It's things. What I'm saying is, in the repression of this Dionysian spirit, as we saw in the myth of where the captain wanted to hold him down and imprisoning him, you see, the destruction that can come out of that, you see, if we can contain Dionysian energy without it becoming too wild and woolly, then we have a chance. But if we repress it, and it's very repressed at this time, and so, you know, we're getting all sorts of kind of, you know, the flap about sexuality and the president. You know, it always, it's coming out in very, very destructive ways. And that's what I'm saying. This is the repression of it. And I think it's more in our country than I see in other countries. And I don't know if you feel that way or not, but it, yeah. Scared everybody to death. But you're right. I mean, there was a loosening, and it did bring in a lot of new cultural revolutions, and we did begin to think of where we had come from. And but it just clamped down again real fast, you see.
But who we are, when we level, we carry our ancestors.
Where do I see Dionysus in the White House? I think he's alive and well, actually. I think some really, no, and I'm, you know, this has caused a lot of sadness and a lot of heartache for a lot of people, and I'm not making light of the situation. I do think it has been quite a creative administration, and things have happened, and we have in some ways benefited from those things. Now, it's not to say that, you know, that we're going to legislate morality. I don't think that we can. But I think what has happened more for me out of this is seeing what our collective understanding, our conscious collective understanding is of private lives of public people, and also how very naive we are nationally, how almost the way we are. Very much. No, I love what the French newspaper said, that Americans needed to elect a pope instead of a president. That's what they wrote. And I think, you know, it is... So I think we, you know, we are... But I really do think this is a pivotal point, if maybe we can grow into some understanding with it. But you can understand our level of Dionysian collective consciousness, I mean, how repressed it is. If all this stuff is just blown so out of proportion, you see, it's just unrealistic. Yeah. That's my take on it. I don't think we'd be a bit better off with the Pope, but that's, I mean, they want that stamp on it for some reason, yeah. Yeah?
But you said that there's a Gnostic element in this, and then
direct knowledge.
That
a Gnostic? Of the Dionysian aspect? I think it is very much, and I really never associated that, but and I'm glad you brought that point in, but the sense of it being, well, in the Gnostic Gospels, there's certainly much more open, and there's a sense of real freedom, and certainly a different way of acceptance of women. And that whole, in the sense of eros, you see, that we find in the Gnostic Gospels, are gnosis that we don't find in kind of a patriarchal Apollonian approach. Back there, yes, sir. Control, yes. Exactly.
I mean, there is a real danger in approaching something like that.
Absolutely.
But we won't be conscious of
No, I don't think, you know, and I did not want to imply that anything goes, you see. It's just not a license to, with a Dionysian energy, that there's just a license to go out and do anything you will. And that's supposed to be good for individuation. No, we're not looking at that at all. Actually, in Delphi, in Greece, the temple of Apollo there, On one pediment, there was depicted Apollo, his sister Dione, his mother Leda, and the Muses, who are associated with Apollo. On the opposite pediment was Dionysus and the Maenads. You see, both were worships there. There's vase paintings in which, as if brothers seeking each other, had their arms outreached to each other. In the festivals in Delphi, the summer festivals honored Apollo, the winter months honored Dionysus, and the dark months, you see. Both have a reason to be there. And I think what you're saying is we don't have that other part. We just have the one worship of the Apollonian god. We look at our culture, which has very much to do with control. Now, if we can begin to understand the necessity of this other god, and yet within a sense of containment, not control, then I think this other life can perhaps find its way in. You have something. You. I have a hard time separating it for this reason. You know, I think there's a great deal of Apollonian way in marketing those records, you see. It's absolutely controlled right down the middle how they can sell what they want to sell.
But they're selling Chinese.
Well, it's both and, but it's still being controlled. Now, I see Dionysus I don't know. I think everybody sees them like they need to see them, and that's what we're all about, you know, each one developing their own way of entering and finding this energy. It's not a collective thing, as usually. It comes into the individual as something that just breaks through. Other than it's at times of Fashnak or Mardi Gras, you see, and you see this kind of gay abandonment that goes, but it's in a way contained. We have it for 2 weeks or a week, you see. Now that would be collective, and I'm thinking more how the individual experiences it, what it has to do with an individuating process. And to me, that has more of a sense of where is it that I move out of my rut? Where do I feel new energy moving in? Not that I become a part of some subculture, which would simply mean I'm also in a collective situation. Conscious collective situation. But where do I allow that energy to move me in the direction which I it feels pulling me there. It entices me, intrigues me, wants me to go. It breaks upon me in a new way. So I see myself differently. I feel myself differently. Those kind of things. Yes.
I think this is very abstract. I can't really come to the next level to explain. I'm a philosopher. Or there's Apollo. I've got to think about it. I don't know how much it is.
Good idea.
Mm-hmm.
think we have one more back there. You? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the thing that we recognize, whatever pattern it is in our life, it's not just an escape. That, I mean, that's part of it, but where the real creative sense of life comes in too, you see. Where is it that I feel inspired? Where is it that something is there that is a transformative aspect? That's where the divine comes in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's been great being with you, and I hope to see some of you tomorrow when we look at the slides of the Villa of Mysteries, and we'll talk at great length about it and develop this understanding of Dionysus a bit more. But keep him in mind. See how you see him. See how you feel him. See how he comes. How he comes to you. Yeah. Good night now, and happy Valentine's Day to you.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.